Hey guys, this is April. Did you know that you can leave us a voice message with your feedback or a question right on our Anchor homepage and we can incorporate it into the podcast? So cool. Head to anchor.fm/east to west WLS. Scroll down the page a little bit until you see the message button. Using your smartphone, click that button and leave us your feedback or a question, and we will drop it in an upcoming podcast episode. We're so excited to connect with you. Thank you for your continued support of East to West WLS. Hello, and welcome to East to West WLS, the podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April, and I'm the West.
And I'm Jason, and I'm the East.
And today, we welcome back one of the most fabulous women on the planet, Wendy Rawlings. Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I am great. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah. Oh, well, you are, as you know, you are Jason and I's favorite person. You're absolutely my favorite person because you are my therapist and you are the woman who has, you know, ushered me through my first almost 2 years of bariatric surgery. And it's because of your sage wisdom and advice and sometimes very difficult conversations. I'm sitting here down 120 pounds and Jason is down over getting close to 200 pounds because he's learned from me that I've learned from you. So.
Wow, you guys are amazing. Congratulations.
Osmosis, thank you. Yeah, yes. As of this morning, 174 pounds. So, yeah.
Wow, well done. Well done.
Unbelievable. Thank you. So before we dive into this conversation, maybe you're brand new to our podcast. You don't know who Jason or I or Wendy is. Actually, all three of us have had bariatric surgery. Wendy is a longtime veteran. I'm 2 years out. Jason is
a year and a month.
And I think combined, we've lost over 500 pounds, which is just amazing. And the reason that Wendy is such a wizard in our community is because she's a very skilled counselor. And she's had bariatric surgery. So she really can guide us and you know, ask the right questions for us on a personal level and then on a bariatric patient level. So she really is this deadly ninja in our community. And the conversation today is going to get straight to the heart of the matter. We recently, right, made it public that in May, vices was going to be our topic. And we can't believe the outpouring of interest and question and stories that we've gotten from our community, but all privately. So what that tells us is that this is a very needed topic, that a lot of people are struggling with vices either before or after surgery, and they desperately want some help or guidance, but they're not yet ready to go public about their struggle. So before we really kind of dive into this conversation, do you have any quick insights, Wendy, as to why that is? Why is it so hard for people to say, I'm struggling with this?
Well, I think there's a lot of shame and guilt and it's just a hard thing that's attached to it. And remember that we are a community that's been kind of brought up in shame and guilt for our size, our weight, our appearance. And so we're super sensitive to that. And why would we do that to ourselves? Why would we bring extra shame and guilt?
Yeah, exactly. When we've already had surgery and we're hoping that the shame and guilt will go away, only to realize, oh, the shame and guilt is still there. It just looks different or it's in a different area. Yeah. So it's like these continual waves just keep crashing and we just.
Yeah. And we want to, because we're smart and because we, you know, we want to avoid feeling guilt and shame. Sometimes you have to face it head on though.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. This conversation is going to be amazing. And Wendy did share with us some very amazing graphics. So if you would like to watch this podcast episode, you absolutely can. We have a glorious YouTube channel where all of our episodes are actually housed. So if watching is more of your favorite modality of learning, head over to YouTube and search East2West_WLS and our fabulous YouTube channel will pop up. So if you are a visual learner, highly recommend that you watch this one. And I mean, listen to, but yeah, she's got some really great things that she's going to be sharing with us today. Okay, so before we really, really dive into the conversation, will you introduce yourself, Wendy, to our listeners and to our followers, to those who don't know you?
Sure, yeah. I'm Wendy Rawlings. I practice in the Seattle-Tacoma area of Washington State. I had bariatric surgery almost 16 years ago, and I dropped 205 pounds, bounced back 10 because that's where I was healthy, and kept most of that. It's a moving target, but not more than 5 pounds on either side. It was a life changer. It was kind of like having a new birthday. And it just really did change my life. I had the Ruin Y and didn't get a lot of support afterwards, but I started getting referrals from my doctor, my surgeon, and then the doctors in the area, the hospitals in the area, and learned that after I've been practicing since 1985, I started when I was 12. And
because you're a genius.
And learned that it's the bariatric community is really being underserved, but it's also a population I just love. It's my people. And so I pretty much have focused just on that practice. So now I'd say 80% of my clients are bariatric patients or weight loss patients. I have patients that are not bariatric. They don't want to do the bariatric route, or they want to try something first and then go that way. And we're having a blast. We're having a lot of fun.
I always have fun with my personal sessions with you, and I always leave there with some other nugget of information. And usually Jason is the first person to understand that nugget, because I'll call him or we'll have a conversation. I'm like, Jason, I just spoke with Wendy. Oh my God, guess what she said? And then we're just like, oh my, yeah. So
you guys are great.
Genius. Oh goodness. All right. So the questions for today, I'm looking at my notes here because I want to make sure that we let our listeners and our watchers know what this conversation is going to be about. We kind of got some big questions. What is advice? Why do we have them either before or after surgery? We want to talk a little bit about addiction transfer, and we do not want you to get thrown off by the word addiction, because really what we're talking about is addiction, dependence, or a tolerance with food. We want to understand, I guess, really what we can do after surgery to avoid these vices, or to recognize that we have them and then move beyond them. That's kind of the goal of the conversation today. And I know that Jason and I are going to be open and honest, sharing about the things that we have struggled with, so that you and the community know that you are not alone. Struggling is very normal. It's very natural. Wendy had a beautiful way of describing it before we actually hit record, and I'm sure she'll go into detail about that. But yeah, right. This is going to be a hard conversation, but a hard conversation is what is needed for us to find long-term success after our procedure. Okay. Are you guys ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's do it.
All right.
Hey guys, it's April. When I'm craving something sweet, I always head to my pantry and I grab my jar of Retreat Drinks Hot Cacao. But I know I'm doing it for more than just my sweet tooth. Cacao is one of the highest plant-based sources of magnesium, the most efficient mineral in the Western world. Magnesium is so important for a healthy heart, and it helps turn glucose into energy, enabling our brain to work with laser-sharp clarity and focus. It's a total mood booster without the caffeine. I absolutely love it, and I think you will too. Visit retreatdrinks.com and use the code EASTTOWEST for 20% off your first order. Happy sipping! Okay, first things first, let's define and describe vices. What the heck are they?
So the way that I will define a vice is when our emotional or physical load becomes so great that we don't have enough emotional or physical resources to handle them. So we turn to something else. And that's a vice. That's what we turn to. So okay. It's the way we cope.
And a vice can be anything, right? It's not just food or consumption related.
Correct. It's done anything done to access. You could even have exercise could be a vice. Anything done to excess that interferes with your relationships, your job, your family, anything that you didn't mean to do, but you did anyway, anything like that.
Okay. Now this, all of a sudden my brain's like, oh my God, like sometimes I think reading is advice for me, right? Like I can just sit down and read for 12 hours a day. Well, if I did that every day, that would be detrimental to the rest of my life.
Bingo. Totally that. Yep.
Okay. So Jason, what were your vices before or after surgery? When you think about what that definition is.
Mine was always money and food. Basically my vice was just bigger. It was bigger everything. Whether it was bigger amount of money spent, faster race car that I had, doing stuff to my motorcycle to make them faster, or, you know, spending the most amount of money when we had it, or just buy, everything I did was big. Like if I bought, I couldn't just go buy a shirt. I had to go buy five shirts and some pants and some shorts. I had to buy, I couldn't have one pair of Jordans. I had 44 pair of Jordans, and they were collectors. So they were special. And so they were in a closet all by themselves. And it was it. I mean, like everything about how I lived before was in excess of everything. And it has taken, you know, 46 years of my life, and coming on the backside of when we moved to Florida, you know, my wife and I were making over $120,000 a year. And in Oklahoma, that's a lot of damn money. And you could do a lot of stuff with that money. And when we got here to Florida and both of our salaries were cut in half, it, you know, at that point, she just looked at me and was like, now you don't have a choice. Because before she could talk to me about it, and I'm like, yeah, no, it's fine. We're good. You know, there's still money in the bank. Don't worry about it. Man, bills are paid. Who cares? Well, you know, and I just went for it. Like, it didn't matter what it was. Like, at one point, I had two motorcycles. I had a pickup truck to pull my race car with, but I had to have a trailer to pull the race car with because you can't drive the race car. So you had to have a truck and a trailer. That was aside from my everyday driver car that I had. And then I had another truck and another enclosed trailer because that took care of my business stuff that I was doing on the side. Like everything I did, it was so much. At one point in time, we were paying almost $1,000 a month in insurance alone for vehicles. And half of them, I didn't even drive most of the time.
Wow.
And if I wanted to take my race car to the racetrack that weekend, it was a minimum of $300 just to get all the race gas and the oil and the stuff that I needed to be able to run it and to pay the way to get in and to pay the gas for the truck to get there. And it was just a thing. And like, if I look back on it now, we probably could have paid off the house we live in now with the amount of money I spent in probably a 2-year period.
Wow.
I can relate. After surgery, well, maybe even before surgery, my vice too is shopping and spending money. And of course, food, that was a huge one. And I can remember spending many separate nights crying in my closet over the excess that was there, right? And just realizing none of this brought me any closer to what I was seeking, which was freedom. And in fact, it was just pushing me deeper and deeper into a cell. So yeah, very much
really good definition. Yeah, you guys are great. You totally nailed it.
Does everybody have a vice, or is this something that just select people have?
Well, no, I put really, you know, kind of sarcastically, not sarcastically, tongue in cheek in the show notes. Of course they do. It sells books and newspapers, but those, you know, famous people's vices are to be, you know, they're more public. Everyone, unless they're completely perfect, is going to have a way to cope when things are hard, and ways that they look back and go, you know, I wish I could have that back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because it's, you know, as I'm looking here at the notes, we want to frame this as a way, you know, a vice is something that we use to get through.
Yeah. And it's a way we cope with our life.
It's a way that we cope. And it's not that necessarily, you know, I think not all vices are bad, you know, well, all vices to extreme are bad, but like reading is a good habit until it becomes excessive, right? We need to buy things to live until it becomes excessive. You know, alcohol and drugs, we don't actually need to live, but there's, I think, reasons for those things every now and then in our life. But when it's done to excess, okay, that's...
It's when it starts running us instead of it, of we running it. Because a lot of these things are good things. We need to eat, we need to shop, we need to read, we need to recreate, but we want to be in charge of that and not it in charge of us.
That makes a whole lot of sense. And I think Jason and I, we all, I think, know what that means or what that feels like when you realize that you are not in control of that vice, of that thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the scariest things, like I think about when we start going through kind of the list of these things, I kind of put them into different categories because there's the ones that will eventually, you'll run out of resources for it. Like you can't shop forever because you'll run out of money. You'll run out of it. You know, you'll end up losing your job, your house, your home. Like you can run yourself out of resources, but you go to things like porn addiction, things like that, that there really is no resource for. And those are the really scary ones, because how do you, like, there is no, like, you can excess yourself, you know, terribly in some of those things with no real cliff to go over, because at the end of the day, there is nothing to stop you and go, well, now what are you going to do? Because there's no, like, that's just an excess that you can just keep feeding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that there's been some really bad things happen to people based on those types of things when there is no real stopping point.
That is correct. Yep. That's a good point.
Well, and so many vices, I think, that we either have before or after surgery, like you said, are always available. And I think what makes food such an interesting or a scary vice is that we have to eat to live. So we're always walking this fine line between, okay, well, have I eaten to live, or am I eating to excess? Mm-hmm. And we're very good at blurring that line. And I think we were very good at blurring that line before surgery. So then all of a sudden, right, you make the commitment to have surgery. You know, a week or two, you kind of like get out of your fog of what you've actually done. I think a lot of us go through this grieving process because you realize, oh my gosh, I really was that dependent on food. And then you panic and you are looking for something to fill that panic. And it's a really dangerous time. And I guess that's kind of my next question. Why do people turn to vices after surgery at such a high rate?
Okay. So this gets to the heart of the matter. So what I want to do is kind of reframe the idea of vices. And on the slides, if you want to show those slides, we'll just talk them through, and I'll talk to the listeners. I'll talk them through it too. But Perfect. If we can start looking at vices, let's look at the addiction cycle first, because I think that's probably the first place to start. If we understand the cycle of addiction, it starts out with resource overload. So we just have too much going on for our emotional or physical resources. So we look around for a way to manage those, and that can create craving. And that craving could be for, you know, the bigger car or the shopping trip or the food or the alcohol or the drugs or the porn. It could be whatever is going to do it for us. And that craving gets satisfied. So we do that addiction activity, whatever it is. And temporarily, we feel a lot better. That's that high that we get. And it's that dopamine change in our brains that helps us to feel better. And then afterwards, and sometimes it's almost right afterwards, like I like that crying in the closet analogy, Heather, we go to our closets and cry, figuratively or literally, and we feel depressed, we feel guilty, we feel really uncomfortable. And then we, you know, that becomes another emotional trigger that we want to feed. So the setup for that is the BLASTED. It's a BLASTED is sort of the reasons that we vice. And it's an acronym, BLASTED. It's an acronym for feeling bored, feeling lonely. The A is for anxious or angry. The S is for stress. Oh, I forgot H. H is for hungry or our hormones are out of whack. S is for sad or stressed. T is for tired, E is for excited, and D is for depressed. So those are the emotions that generally, not always, but generally set us up to feel like we need that, like we don't have enough emotional resources to handle the load that we're getting.
And I mean, looking at this list, this is like every person that's living on the planet. I mean, you experience these things every single day, just like being a human.
It's exactly right. If you have a pulse on a temperature, you have these things. That's just part of being a person. You're exactly right. Wow. And so this comes to the point. When we're feeling those feelings, originally when we felt them, we were usually quite a bit younger than we are now. Because if we feel them now, we've got resources. We know how to manage it. But when we were young, we would feel these things and we wouldn't know. And sometimes they were a result of traumas, you know, divorce, abuse, bullying, you know, all kinds of things. And so in our younger days, we didn't have the resources to handle what we needed to handle. So if you want to go to that, what our vices did for us, what we would do is we would attach to a vice. Maybe it was food. So food would comfort, nurture, nourish us, or we'd attach to, I don't know, other things, stealing. I know people that started to attach to stealing or sneaking out at night. They started attaching to risky behaviors, or that's when they start doing drugs or alcohol. Sometimes they would attach to people that were really, really bad for them. They were bad influences, and or they became really codependent, because codependence would help them feel like they were making a contribution. Mm-hmm. So So we attached to what we'll call vices here, and they provided something for us. They provided fun, reward, strength, and stamina, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute. With food, it was taste, some kind of pleasure. They helped us fit into society sometimes. We got some of us who need to live on the edge and have that excitement. So they provided that. Sometimes they provided protection, but it was an emotional survival that it provided. So those vices actually filled a need or a hole in our life. Mm-hmm. And we didn't start the vice saying, you know what, I'm really going to get addicted. I'm going to mess myself up later on. We just needed that thing in our life. So when we talk about vices now, it's important to talk about them as coming from a place of need. And it actually was our friend at one point.
Well, and the bad part is it's almost like it's creating a trauma bond that you get because of, depending on what happened at the time that you chose the vice to get you through it. Those bonds are some of the hardest to break, you know, given their Absolutely. Background and the way they're so deeply rooted in you. So, I mean, it only stands to reason that we would need this type of assistance to be able to get past something like that, because it's not just something you can walk away from and go, oh, well, I'm done with that. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Exactly. You totally got it, Jason. You said that really well. That's exactly right. When we're bonded there, part of us is emotionally stuck there. And we're going to talk about that and what to do about that in a few minutes.
So when I look at this list too, I'll just say I turned to food because I needed to numb out. I had so much going on, right? There was just so much out here, and I just needed a place where I could think about, where I could zone out. And it wasn't alcohol and it wasn't drugs, but it was food. So if you're listening or watching this going, that's also what our vices can do for us, is to help us numb it all out.
Totally is. I'm going to add that to my list, April. That's a good one. And it's exactly true. So, I want to talk just a minute about strength and stamina, and actually numbness can come in here too. We use our vices to give us strength during the day and stamina at the end of the day when we're totally run out. Willpower is a consumable resource. In the morning when we get up, I have $100 emotional in the bank of Wendy. And if I have an addiction, I'm going to pay those out straight away. So then I'll only have $80 emotional to get through the day. If I have, if I get emotionally surprised, I will be paying into whatever happens during the day to get through my day. So if I've had a pretty hard day by the end of the day or even mid-afternoon, I'm starting to feel it. I'm starting to feel a little bit worn out. And so in her book, The Willpower Instinct, Kelly McGonigal talks about willpower, won't power, and want power. And our willpower is high in the morning, decreases through the day. And it becomes super important that we quit focusing on willpower and we talk about want power and won't power. So that's a book that I highly recommend. We're not going to have time to talk about those principles today, but if you get a chance, please get that book. I'll tell you what, I did not like the name of it. Willpower Instinct drove me crazy. It sat in my wish list for a year before I finally bought it because I hated the title. I do not like the word willpower. So, but it is so worth the read. I think I'm on my fourth read of it.
I'll just say, I mean, I'm so thankful that we're finally talking about willpower in its true terms, because I think people feel guilty because they think, oh, I just don't have any willpower. No, you have it, but it is an expendable resource. And you can't really generate more of it. It's just like you have to use it when you have it. And then when you're out, until you can regenerate it on your own. And one of the most powerful, I think, conversations that Jason and I've had either with each other or with somebody else in our community, but it's talking about some mornings you wake up and you're feeling really good and you're like, no, I got this, right? But other things in your day have already gone well, or it's a light day and I'm not going to need a lot of willpower. Like, okay, this is going to be good. And then other mornings happen, and as soon as your alarm goes off, you have already expelled 90% of your willpower just getting your ass up out of bed. So then no wonder on those days you want to binge or eat or drink or drug or turn to whatever it is, because you have already spent that bank, that deposit of willpower is already gone from the moment you wake up.
Totally. Totally. Well said. Well said, April. So if we can understand that our vices actually started out as a way to cope and are our friends, and we'll go to that slide probably at the end.
Okay.
And that one's where, that's the money slide right there. So if we can understand that it was actually our friend, it helped us to get through some tough situations. And so what our vices actually are symptoms of a bigger issue. So the issue might be loneliness, it might be trauma, it might be fear, it might be anger. It's the symptom, and it's helping us get through whatever that bigger issue is. So we are gonna tend to cross addict or transfer addict if we don't actually hit what the real underlying issue is.
Hey guys, it's April. I don't know if you know this, but Gather Juice Company was our first podcast sponsor. And for good reason. They make some bomb-ass juices. My absolute favorite is the Sunrise and the Pineapple Express. Night Vision and Goldilocks come in a real close third and fourth. I also very much enjoy their smoothies. Pina Colada, top of my list. If you live locally in the Tacoma area, swing by their 6th Avenue location and try it for yourself. You're going to be hooked. Big shout out to Gather Juice. Thank you for your sponsorship.
So, and maybe this is a question for you. Have you noticed that you have transferred a vice, right? Have you swapped one thing for another along your journey? And how did you know? How did you recognize that you were doing that?
I haven't necessarily swapped one for another, but I would say I have continued. Because now, and I've really had to check it, and Sarah's been on me about keeping me in check about it too, because now that I'm smaller and can fit regular everyday clothing, I see something online, I see something, you know, those ads come up on Facebook and it'll be a funny shirt or whatever, and I'll just grab it. I'm like, bam, I can fit that. It's got my size. Boom, got it. Or if I go into Walmart for anything, they have little polos and stuff that'll fit me now. And I'm like, oh man, that's really cool. I'll just snag it. Well, I bought 5 pair of Nikes because I can fit regular shoes again. And within, I would say, about a week and a half time frame, and the boxes just kept coming to the door. And finally she's like, hey man, like what are you doing?
Up,
and
I'm
like,
what do you mean?
She's like, well, I mean, like, I get a pair of shoes, but why do we need 5 pairs of shoes? And I'm like, because I can fit them and they're only $60. And she's like, yeah, but $60 times 5 is not just $60 anymore. And you also bought these shirts and this stuff, you know, so she's like, you need to calm down. And I'm like, you know what? I didn't think about that. You're right. Just because I can fit it and I can buy it, it's the same situation with food. Just because I can eat it and I can get it, I don't need it right now. It'll be there tomorrow. Like, those shoes are still going to be there. Like, they're not going to make it Nikes just because I didn't buy them today.
Yeah.
So,
well, and Jason,
really reel myself back in about that.
The thing that I find really interesting about your experience is, I think before, just based on the stories that I've heard that you've told us before about yourself before surgery, people confronted you on your food consumption all the time before surgery, and you basically told them to take a flying leap, right? Like, that was not even up for discussion. And now the fact that your very loving wife is very gently pointing out to you that, hey, what the hell are you doing, bro? And you didn't, you know, you didn't discount, you didn't ignore, you didn't deflect. You were probably not happy about it, but you at least acknowledged it, right? So that's,
yeah, I spent a lot of pre-op with the rebel mindset, with the, you're not going to tell me what I am and aren't going to do, and I'm not going to eat, or what I'm going to spend, or what I'm, you know, this is my money, rah, rah, rah. I was that guy, just to the T, to the hilt, like whatever it was, you weren't going to tell me. So the rebel in me was like, oh, you don't think I should eat 4 triple cheeseburgers? Well, guess what? That's exactly what I'm going to do. And large fry and a big drink and what, you know, rah. But I'm sitting in my car by myself, talking to literally no one. I'm not showing anybody at the end of the day, you know, well, I showed you, like, showed you what? Like, showed you that I'm going to just plow down all this food and feel like an idiot, because I never felt great when I was done. I felt awful. I was on the verge of throwing up so many times. So I'm like, you know, I didn't show anybody at the end of that. I'm like, I'll show you. I'll weigh 468 pounds and barely be able to get out of bed. Like, what? That's not showing anybody anything. So it took a lot of processing those types of things. And initially when she brought it to my attention, I wanted to be like, hey, look, I get you don't like that I'm buying these shoes, but I can finally fit shoes again. And kind of in my head, I kind of went through some dialogue when it initially happened. And I was like, you know what? Nope, because she's right. I really don't need to be doing all this right this second. Like, just because I can grab a couple and it'll be fine. Go back later. And, I don't need to have all this right this second. So yeah, it took a lot of work to get there, but I'm actually glad I'm there.
Well, I mean, I brought up the addiction cycle wheel again, Wendy, on the screen, because, really what you did, Jason, is that you went through that cycle and then you had it brought to your attention and you stopped the cycle. You stopped the cycle at emotional trigger. I mean, you're still being triggered emotionally because you're human, but now you're saying, okay, wait a minute, what is going on?
And I've got to make
I've come across a lot of things since we've had the conversation that I've been like, oh, and I'll be like, nope, wait a minute. I was like, let me not, because I'm not, because at the end of the day, she's right. Because now I'm going to be like I am now for the remainder of my life. Yeah. So if I continue down the path of I've got to buy all this right now because I can fit it because it's great and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Where am I going to be in 6 months from now? Mm-hmm. Because like I said before, it's a finite resource. Like I will run out. Like I cannot just continue to throw money at stuff that I really don't need. Because if you look in my closet, I'm struggling to slide stuff in as it is.
Well, but again, that's what this whole conversation is about. You don't need anything. None of us need anything above and beyond what we already have. It's just that we're getting triggered and we're looking to fill whatever we're missing, right?
That's exactly right. There's a hole there. It's a great analogy, Jason. I think your closet was getting as full as your stomach.
100%. It's excess. Yeah. Because I only have one head on my body. But I have, like, the hats are another thing. I've got 15, 16 hats. They're $40 a piece. Mm-hmm. The math. Like, I don't need any more hats, but now I have 2 or 3 hats I can wear with black stuff. And I've got a couple of hats I can wear with blue stuff. And then I had to get And then I bought a hat because I loved the way it looked. And it was actually in my size for one time. And I don't have anything to go with. I don't
have shit. sounds like a new vice coming right up, Jason.
Right. So I either have to go buy a shirt that'll match it, or it just sits in the closet, which is another waste of money. So I laugh at myself when I step back and actually look at the totality of it, because like you said, Everett, like I don't need anything. I didn't need a new hat, but I saw this hat come across. I saw, all the hats that I bought and I'm like, man, they're on sale today. So I'm saving money if I buy it right now.
Sorry, Jason, I didn't mean to cut you off. The question that I want to ask is, what do you think you're trying to fill? What are you missing from your life that you're trying to fill with shoes and hats? Sorry,
it's
what is that?
It's got to be the fact that I can't eat the way I used to, because I'm used to consuming large mass amounts of food all the time. And the fact that I cannot do that, because I'll still look at certain foods depending on what we're eating at the time. And I've said it out loud before, like, man, I wish, I wish it was pre-op so I could just plow through like 5 of these. Like, and I still feel that way from time to time, depending on what it is. Like, there's just certain restaurants that have certain things that I really wish I could consume in excess of still today.
So Jason, just to take that a little further, what does consuming in excess, whether it's food or hats or clothes, what does that do for you?
I just feel like I'm just one of those people that if it something is really good to me, I don't want it to end. I've always been that way, whether it be relationships, friends, going out to do stuff with family members. Like there's been times that literally we've met up with a group of friends at like 11 in the morning and we won't get home from doing activities until like 4, 5, 6 o'clock the next morning. because I'm one of those people that I'm just, if it, we're having a good time, I want to ask you to keep going, like whatever it is, no matter what.
What does ending a good time mean for you? You know, what does that signify?
It's funny because you, if you really think about it, you're like, you don't know when it's going to happen again, because it's like, well, now I've got to go back to work and I've got to do all this shit. Like this may be Saturday or Sunday that all this stuff comes to an end. So now I've got the whole week to wait. And, you know, what if something happens between now and then that we can't do something next weekend? Or what if they've got plans or whatever it may be? Like, what, you know, what all the what ifs in the world do you want to go through?
Gotcha.
But it literally, it's just one of those things that, you know, if it does come to an end, when is it going to happen again?
When will we do it again? So this sounds like, and this is really typical in our community. Actually, it's typical everywhere. But I think you nailed something. And I'm really excited because the people that are listening to this, oh, this is a big one. We've got scarcity and abundance. And I think maybe what you got going on is scarcity. I'm going to grab it. I'm going to grab it in abundance with both hands for as long as I can, because yeah. I believe that the place that I'm, that my emptiness is, if I feel like there's a scarcity of it, or I'm worried that there will be a scarcity in the future. So I'm going to go big or go home.
And I think, and I really, as you were talking about it and I'm processing through it, I can actually nail it down to when I was young. I was 9 when my dad left my family, and there wasn't scheduled, I mean, there was scheduled visitation. He just chose kind of when he was and wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like it was all the time routine. He would come, we would go, and we would come back. And so it wasn't that. So I think really where that came from was, is when I do actually get to spend time with him during that time frame, I wanted all of that, and I didn't want it to end because I really never knew when it was going to happen again. So right. To me, I think that really kind of encompasses where it all started for me back at, yeah, as far as age 9.
Well done. That is like the perfect example of how vices get started, the trauma bond. And so you got your 9-year-old buying your hats and your clothes and the extra food. That's really who's in charge of that decision. That's a really, really good example of that scarcity and how it gets going. And then the abundance and the dichotomy. And we see that a lot. We see that a lot. So yeah. Thanks, Jason. That was great.
That's
nice. Yeah.
That was like, Wendy, you can send Jason's bill for his session today to the East to West address. That'll be a business expense.
That's hilarious.
But isn't that, but you know, just, you know, I know this isn't a simple conversation, but it really kind of is, because all we're doing is just asking the question about like, okay, well, but why is that? Or what am I actually missing? What am I really trying to fill? Why, you know, you're trying to get not to the item itself or to the thing itself. You're trying to get to its root cause.
Getting underneath. Yeah. The item is a symptom of the issue, whatever the issue is. It's just a symptom. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get to the issue. And Jason, you just did a beautiful job of that. So
Well, and the reason I think it's so difficult is because we don't want to hear it from other people. We've been avoiding it for so long. We don't want to be called out. We're already feeling ashamed about our size. And now somebody wants to call us out on the other horrible things that we're doing. Mm-hmm. But if we don't listen to the people who are around us and love us, we might miss the vice. We might miss what we're doing. Grady had a very simple and honest conversation with me, which I probably threatened to decapitate him over alcohol. But it was because of that very simple, like, oh, well, you don't like beer. Fuck you, I like beer. No, I don't, right? So why am I doing this? Oh, it's because I'm feeling, it's because this is actually what the issue is. Wow. So I think, you know, the question that everybody in our community wants to know is really how do I know that I'm transferring or that I'm moving one thing to another? What does it look like in real life?
Gotcha. So it basically looks like it did before the surgery as well. Do we wrestle with this decision to do whatever the thing is? Do I wrestle with my food that I eat? Do I wrestle with the shopping that I do? Do I wrestle with the shows that I watch on TV that I am attracted to that might not uplift me? So is this a decision that I really have to think about, or do I just kind of go stupid on myself and then do it and then regret it later? And another one is, do I do it even when I don't want to? You know, is it just become such such a thing that I do. Like, I'm sick of doing it, but gosh, I can't not do it. Does it negatively affect other areas of your life? And another one is after, and this is a big one, and it's part of the cycle, part of the addiction cycle, is do I regret doing it later? Do I feel shame? Do I feel guilt? Do I have regret? So it really isn't any different. Those feelings are going to be any different than you felt pre-surgery. It's just, you know, surgery didn't change your brain, just changed your stomach.
Well, and I know a lot of times too, that regret, people may think, well, I don't regret that, you know, after it happens, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that day. You don't have to regret it that day. You can, like, because I know a lot for me when I push it, because I've, you know, talked about this before, I may have, you know, a couple of things during the day, one or two things that I know aren't going to be good for me the next day, because I'm a daily weigher. And so I know, and so I have the conversation with myself in the morning before I look down at the number on the scale, and I'm like, damn it. And I'll sit there and think about it. I'm like, why the hell did you eat that? Because you know, when you look down, this is not going to be what you want to see. And I go through this with myself, you know, a lot. And so I don't want people out there to be like, well, I don't regret anything I do. But if you have those conversations with yourself the next day or maybe the day after, yeah, and you change your behavior because of those conversations, yeah, you're doing something that there's mm-hmm. something in there that you probably need to discuss. And
yeah,
don't be afraid of the hard conversations, because that's what got us to where we are today. Like, you wouldn't have been able to get to surgery, through surgery, on the other side, as far as you, however, whatever journey, whatever stage of the journey you're in, you got here by having hard conversations that you didn't want to have to begin with.
Popping out of denial. And that's the hardest thing. That's the hardest thing. Yeah.
And I think what makes this conversation so difficult is that for a time we felt so empowered, because it's like, nope, I dealt with this. I made the decision. I made changes. I'm doing everything right. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, I'm right back where I started, or it feels like it. So it's very easy to discount all the work that you've done, because, well, the feelings are the same after surgery. And I thought the feelings were going to be totally different, or they weren't going to be here at all because I had surgery, right? Like, I did what I thought I needed to do. And now this is bullshit because I'm feeling the exact same way. So to deal with that, I'm going to go shop or drink or sex or
just get out of the feeling. Yeah. So it's really important to one of the things that we have to do, and we never learned to do it before surgery. And if you can learn to do it, if you're listening and you haven't had surgery, do it, learn to do it now, do it today, is learn to step back and get curious and look at things without judgment, because judgment has been our worst enemy. It's something we've been the victims of. It's been something we've been the perpetrators of. And judgment is not helpful. It's just not helpful. So if we can step back, get curious, and look at ourselves without judgment, and even maybe with compassion, we can go, oh, you know, I just thought this was going to fix everything, and it didn't. And so instead of getting tangled back up in the old pattern, we just step back and go, okay, well, what do I need to do then? What do I need to do in addition to the surgery? What do I need to do? And then we'll be on the right track.
Hey, it's April with East to West WLS. I don't know about you, but after I dropped a significant amount of weight, my body just didn't feel like my own, and I needed help feeling like it was my own again. So I started receiving chiropractic care. If you live in the Tacoma area, I cannot recommend Grit City Chiro more. Dr. McKenzie is passionate about helping you feel, function, and live better. Check out her Instagram at Grit City Chiro or her website, gritcitychiropractic.com, for more info and to book your first consultation. And if you mention East to West, you'll get a discount on your first visit. I feel amazing after seeing her, and I think you will too.
And therein lies the work of weight loss surgery, right? Is finding that pause between what you're feeling and what you want to do, to really ask yourself, okay, you know, why am I feeling this way? And if I do that, how is that going to make me feel? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the answer is, it's going to make me feel hopeful, or it's going to give me a break, or it's going to X, Y, Z. And I think that's why a lot of times, the two words that always bubble to the top of our conversations are curiosity and balance. Right. There are some days where the only thing that's going to get me through is some chocolate. And then there are other days where, nope, I can get through by just writing out my thoughts or reading or going for a walk or running on the treadmill, right? Like there's moments where we really do have to make a very educated decision, because again, a lot of us, I think, go into surgery thinking that we're idiots. We're not idiots. We're very intelligent human beings. And after surgery, you can have the power to make that distinction for yourself, right? Now, if you choose chocolate every day, yeah, that's going to be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a new, right? That's your vice, but
it's a new vice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found myself, I made that decision the other night. I was really, Wendy, you know, it's been a rough time frame for me. And I was like, oh my God, I just need some chocolate. And I bought this beautiful bar and I'd been saving it forever. And I cracked it open and I ate a piece. And instantly I was like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And in that moment, I thought, okay, well, I have a decision. I can eat the whole bar, even though it tastes like shit, because that's what I used to do. Or I can throw it away because it tastes like shit. And then I can just learn how to deal with my emotions. It's like, I can just walk myself through my emotions. And I threw my bar away.
Right. That's a great example. I'm going to use these at the end when we get to the solution, because these are fantastic. You and Jason.
Perfect.
And honestly, we didn't rehearse this, so we
no. Amazing. Yeah, if you guys have been listening or watching us for a while, we rehearsed nothing, just so everybody knows.
We literally straight out.
We hit record, and what you get is what you see.
That's right.
All right. So, Wendy, are there telltale signs that will indicate to us, oh, you're swapping a vice, or you are starting to use a vice to cope?
Yeah. So that's a really good question. A lot of it is the stuff that we talked about before. Is it getting in your way? Are you, is it a negative thing in your life? Blah, blah, blah. But here's one thing to try. And most of you won't do this because it's a hassle. And we have learned that we don't spend time on ourselves. We spend time on other people. So, but for those of you who would like to do this, I can 100% guarantee it. So create a specific goal and plan for yourself for the next 3 months. Write it down. And it could be on anything you want it to be, but specific goal and a plan to get there. 3 months, okay? At the end of the 3 months, step back without judgment and see how well you did. And if there's areas, if you did it, hot dog, then you don't have anything interfering with that. You have no vices on that goal or no vices that you're dealing with that keep you off track. If it didn't go so well, then ask yourself, what went wrong? And there's your vice right there. There's your symptom. And what will I do next time? So it becomes important. Okay, well, why did I do this thing? So go deeper, like Jason did a few minutes ago, and figure out what's missing, what that vice did. You know, was it an emptiness? Was it a lack? Like with Jason, it was a scarcity. Was it a habit that you just didn't even think about? It's so automatic, you don't even question that you're going to do it. So what went wrong? What will I do next time? And then if you have a hard time implementing the plan, implementing the goal, or even figuring out what went wrong, then you probably do have a transfer addiction, or you have a pattern that gets in your way, and it's probably an addictive pattern.
And I think I heard you say something a little bit profound, is that you can be using different vices in different situations.
Oh, totally. Yeah. We're not only addicted to one thing. No.
Oh my God. So just to sit back and go, well, mine's shopping. No. You deal with this thing with shopping. You deal with this thing with you fill in the blank.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And you could have not dealt with it for a long time, and then all of a sudden it could come back. I don't shop for myself. I I'll buy what I need for work and, keep me decently clothed, but I will shop for other people or other things. And I confronted it recently, a bout of anger, and I don't get angry. I'm pretty level. And so I don't do anger well. So I'm not practiced in how to manage it. I can tell other people how to do it, but for myself, not so much. And so I found myself, I have a 7-month-old puppy and he's into chew everything stage. And so I found myself schlepping down to the dog store with my dog and just buying everything in that store that he could chew on. And I kid you not, I spent twice as much money as I ever spend on anything at the dog store for that dog. And I thought, well, that is so not me. What is going on? As I'm getting in my car and kind of coming back to myself, because at these times I go stupid on myself. That's what I call it. I go stupid on myself. I sort of just, my logic steps back and I react. I become the reactor instead of the actor. And I got back in the car and thought, oh, that was weird. That was a weird experience. It was not an out of body experience, but it was way not typical of my.
But it feels like it though. Like I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's what I did. So then I sat there and I thought, it's because you were angry. And yep. I wasn't as angry, but I was also very disappointed, you know, on that addiction cycle. And that one just only pops out once in a while, but it's something that I realized that it's still there. And so, yeah. And ordinarily I would have probably gone and eaten something that I, you know, eaten the anger down.
Yeah.
And instead I went and bought dog bones for the dog for the next 40 years, you know? So.
Well, yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because I had a similar experience, because after Sarah and I had talked about the no shoes and the calming down on spending money, I was like, yep, no problem. Well, a couple of, I'd say almost a week later, there's been a specific pair of shoes I have always wanted to be re-released that I had in high school, that I had all the shoes that I bought. I've never been able to rebuy that one pair. And so a friend of mine that I work with buys he's got a ton of shoes. Well, he posted on Instagram that he found the pair of the shoes that I wanted, and that the store had just got a truck in, so they had plenty. And I called the store and they were like, yeah, we got them, come on. The store's 40 minutes from my house. Let me explain to you how I clocked out of work, drove my ass 40 minutes to buy $200 pair of shoes that I've not touched my feet because they're too damn pretty to wear, and drove home, clocked back into work. Like, I took a long lunch to go buy shoes 40 minutes away. And then when Sarah got home, I had to explain to her what the hell I did. But literally, I did the same thing. Like, I removed myself from the situation, autopiloted 40 minutes away, bought these shoes, knowing the whole time I had the rush, the everything going through me, like, probably shouldn't be doing any of this. But, you know, these aren't going to be around forever, so I got to do it right now because the truck came and the shoes and the people and it's there.
Wow.
So I did it and then came back home. And when I clocked back in, everything started to kind of calm down, and I came back too. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm in deep shit. Like, when she gets home, I'm going to explain this.
Like, you went stupid on yourself.
You totally did. Yeah.
No cuts or bruises. So it came out okay. But I'm like, I know when you said that, I'm like, I did. I autopiloted my ass right there and bought some $200 shoes.
Yeah. So that is probably the biggest clue. That's probably the biggest clue we can look at in answer to your question, the telltale sign.
Yes.
We just kind of go on autopilot, go stupid on ourselves. And when we're done, it's like, what in the world just happened?
Yeah. What did I do?
Yeah. Not at all.
Wendy, what I really appreciate about your story, well, and Jason's too, but you're 16 years out of your procedure and you're still experiencing these things. So it's not smart of us to assume that this is all going to go away one day. It's not. We will get more and more in tune with ourselves, and these things will happen at less frequency if we're really doing the work. But we shouldn't be surprised when it springs up on us and we're not expecting it. If we're not practicing, if we're not paying attention, if we're not getting curious, then these things will keep coming up and we won't be making.
Yeah. Every addiction literature will tell you that if you're an addict, you're always an addict. You're an addict that's clean and sober, but you're still an addict. And I think there's so much brain science to substantiate that we don't ever want to think we're out of the woods completely, or we'll be back in the woods and lost in the woods.
Well, yes. that's why you hear people say that they're in recovery. You never heard anybody go, I used to be an addict, but now I'm not. They just go, exactly. I'm in recovery, because it happens. Yeah. That's why when you think about it, you're like, how does somebody that's been clean for 20 years, all of a sudden they're off the wagon and doing whatever they were doing again? Like, you had 20 years. How could you blow that?
Yeah.
But now post-op, you think about it and I'm like, I already would have blown it five or six times. Like, I would shit them out a lot.
Totally get it. Exactly right. Yeah.
And Wendy, the reason that we talk, I mean, I know the answer to this, but I want to make sure that everybody knows the answer to this. The reason that we talk about vices is because if we want to find lasting success after surgery, this is actually where the work lies, right? So my question is, like, how do these vices lead to a lower chance of success after surgery?
You mean a low? Okay. Got it.
Right.
So yes, totally. Yeah, I understand your question. So if I still have vices, I don't acknowledge them, I don't deal with them, when we're weak in one area, or when we're challenged in one area, it transfers to the rest of, just like we transfer addictions, we transfer strengths as well. So if I can be strong in this area, I can transfer that strength to my vices as well. So we're always a work in progress. We're always either gaining strength or we're losing strength. And so that's really the short answer. Everything we do is going to transfer.
Yeah. And I know, just from knowing myself enough, that shame cycle is really strong in me, right? So if I do something and I realize, oh, that was really stupid, I can very easily get kicked into my cycle. And even if the vice is not food, that's where I'm going to end up. I'm going to end up eating, or I'm going to end up drinking. So if I spend too much money, I'm going to feel like a garbage human. That's going to kick me into a depressive state. I'm going to want to get out of that. I'm going to turn to food and alcohol. And then I'm right back at the beginning of that vicious cycle.
Exactly. So, but if you get the urge to drink and you don't, you say, you know what, I'm choosing not to do that today, then you're moving it into that different cycle, the cycle of strength.
Yes.
And you're doing that different cycle, which builds instead of which doesn't build. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Okay. So what do we do if we realize that we are using a vice after surgery?
This is where it's so cool. And you guys are going to think I'm absolutely nuts. So we're going to abstain.
Never.
We're just going to go total abstinence. Go ahead and show that last slide. I have started a new thing that I just ran into one day as I was contemplating my navel. No, I do some meditation that nobody else would call meditation. I'll call it meditation for myself. It's Wendy's meditation. And what I realized is I can abstain, because we're working on our weight loss journey. I'm gonna actually use food as the example, because it is kind of a little bit of revolutionary to use food as the example. Like you said earlier, April, you can abstain from a lot of stuff, but you can't abstain from food. No. So I decided I'm gonna abstain from food. And that's how I'm gonna get control of all my vices, or get control over my biggest vice. Food's not my biggest vice anymore, but get control over myself so that I can get control over my vices. So here's the idea. I'm going to abstain from food, but I'm going to do it with the following rules. I'm going to connect my mind and body together. And in this slide, there's a body, it talks about doing a body scan meditation. So before I eat, I'm abstaining from food until I do a body scan. And this is with every time I eat. I don't do it before I drink, but just before I eat. And I mean, talking drinking water. So I do a body scan and I note any distress in any part of my body. It could be a physical distress. It could be an emotional distress. And then I note what time of day it's happening and the thought or belief that I'm having at the time. Am I distressed? Am I having a distressive thought or belief? Because our thoughts generate emotions and our emotions generate our behavior. So if we can figure out what we're thinking, then oftentimes it will lead to what we're feeling. So then once I've done my body scan and notice what I'm thinking, then I find the feeling and its address in my body, where I'm feeling it. Is it in my legs? Is it in my heart? Is it in my stomach? And then I think about the vice that I want to do. Do I want to eat something? Do I want to go shopping? Do I want to, you know, whatever it is. And And so I put that together with the feeling and the thought I'm having. And then I look at other options. And if my feeling actually, if I'm scanning for, because I want to eat and I'm scanning and my feeling is hunger, then I'm going to eat because that's the time you should eat is when you're feeling
hungry. Yeah.
But if not, then I'm going to try to generate another option and using, I keep a list of other options because sometimes I'm not in my resources at that point. So if I have a list I can look at, I go down my list and generate another option for myself. So basically it is abstaining, whether it's food or it's anything else, until we've done a mind-body scan and figured out what's really going on. And so when you think about it, if with the chocolate, April, if you'd done a mind-body scan, you could have figured out what you wanted to do. And then you could have maybe did what you did because you kind of did that and said, I'm going to eat the chocolate anyway. But then before the second bite, you did another scan and said, you know, this just tastes like garbage. I'm throwing it away.
Yeah.
It wasn't filling the hole that you had in there. So this is the way to go underneath the addiction, to go underneath the feelings and figure out what is happening in your body. And then you've got a chance, like we did with Jason, and we got a chance of figuring out what's really going on. And what I'm feeling is scarcity, or I'm feeling fear that I'm not going to ever have any more fun again. So I'm filling it with something besides what would actually be of lasting worth.
Well, and what makes this so powerful, because when you first said we're going to abstain, I know that is, you know, you don't use that word often. So when you said, oh, we're going to abstain, but, but it's abstain for a hot minute. Right. Exactly. It's not saying no to that. It's saying I'm going to not do that until I do this.
Yeah. That's and the word abstain, I use that on purpose because it's a trigger word. I want everybody's attention, you know. And so, but the other thing you could say instead of abstain, you could say I'm gonna slow my roll. With Jason, as I listen to Jason talk, and Jason, you're just perfect at this. You get going so fast that we don't slow it down. So this is a way to just slow it all down and figure out what's really going on so that I can really fix the underlying issue. And I'm not going to cover it up with one of my vices.
Well, and it's funny that you mentioned it that way, because I am a serial outrunner. Now it's funny to say, because my big ass doesn't run anywhere, but I outrun. Yeah. I eat to outrun my stomach being full. So I try to outeat the wall that you hit if you eat slow. Yeah. I do the same thing with buying stuff, because if I hurry up and just buy it, then I can be guilty about it later. But if I sit, think about it, I may not do it. I won't pull the trigger if I just sit back and think. So if I do it really fast, then I can be done. And I do the same thing with eating. And that's where it got me pre and post op, like even still today. I've done it a couple times where I'm like, ooh, if I just hurry up and sneak a couple more bites before the wall comes, then I'll be able to get in what I wanted to eat. And then as soon as the wall does come and my stomach realizes what the hell's going on, I'm like, oh God, I feel awful. Because nothing's changed, dummy. Like, your stomach is still going to be overly full, whether it still has the capacity for 5 cheeseburgers or part of one. Like, if you just take the extra couple of bites you think you need, you're still going to be the same sick, dummy. Like, that's my problem.
Well, and especially, right? Yeah. I mean, with this method, Jason, I mean, basically you're going to be asking yourself, like, okay, like, why am I doing this? Or why do I feel like I need to eat, to you know, just like what you said. Mm-hmm. And then your vice is eating too much food.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, this works really well if you do it between bites as well. You just scan and go, okay, do I need another bite? What am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? And if I need another bite, then I have one, which is kind of what you did with the chocolate. And that's why you threw it away. So you do it between bites. And I have found, I'm just amazed by it. I'll sit in front of my computer while I'm working, because I do telehealth all day, and I'll drink a protein shake, or I'll do whatever, and I'll just sit and type in my computer answering these questions. And I'm getting all kinds of insights about myself and my reasons for doing what I do. So it's just, it's something that I really am excited to share. It's it takes what I've been doing all along and asking people to do all along, and it just breaks it down into these little small bites, if you will.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Well, and what an easy, simple, well, maybe not easy, but a very simple tool that we can use when we need to check ourselves. Exactly. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Wendy, this has been an enlightening conversation as always. I know Jason and I are both leaving here with some new insights into our own struggles and just into the struggles of the community. I mean, always a game changer whenever we conversate with you. You do have some resources for people. And I have two of them here because you all know I'm a resource fan. Kelly McGonigal's.
Oh, I'm glad you got them. Yes.
I love it.
Okay. They are amazing. So do you want me to go through them? The yellow one is the Willpower Instinct, which is the one that took me a year to buy because of its name. It is incredible. And I want you to know that one uses brain science. It's got a neurological underpinning. I really, really like it. This is a community ed class that she taught that was so popular. It went viral. So she had to write the book. The other one that you've got there is James Clear Atomic Habits, which should be required reading every night and then rereading.
It should be.
And the other thing about, I'll tell you, if you don't want to get the book, just Google James Clear Atomic Habits. He's got a website and he will send you a newsletter once a week. And the newsletter that I always read. There's very few of those that I do read, but that one I always read because it's always helpful and it's very short and he just does everything really well.
Yes.
Another one that I like, Judson Brewer, really heavy on neurology, The Craving Mind. And I just put part of the title. It's The Craving Mind and From Cigarettes to Smartphones to Love, Why We Get Addicted. And it really talks about transfer addiction. And it's got, he said, a ton of neurology research. The man is amazing. He created an app called Eat Right Now, which I really recommend. And it's talks about the body scan. It talks about a lot of the mindfulness stuff. It's a great tool. It's a great resource for what we're talking about here. The other one, Jessica Ortner, The Tapping Solution. She uses EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, which is tapping on your acupuncture points when you have cravings. And they don't have to be food cravings. It could be any craving. It's a great one too. She also has an app for that, but you don't need the app at all to use it. The other two have to do with trauma. And Jason gave us a really great childhood trauma that kind of explains some of the reasons that we get stuck in our patterns and our vices. So the two that I really like there are Lawrence Heller, Healing Developmental Trauma. It's kind of a game changer, very tough read, not because he uses big words, but because the material touches your heart if you've had a childhood trauma. And then the last one, Bessel van der Kolk, who is sort of the father of post-traumatic stress disorder, The Body Keeps the Score. He uses neurology to explain what's up with our bodies and why our bodies crave, our minds crave. And we didn't even talk about the dopamine pathways that addictions create,
that's another episode. Yes.
Yeah, well,
And if you go back into the East to West catalog, there's phenomenal interviews with Wendy. One of them, we just deep dive into addiction transfer, what it is, what it means. And then I'm pretty sure we also just have one on addiction. So lots of resources if you want to continue your understanding of vices and addiction transfer or tolerance, dependence, all of these words that we have been using today, we have talked with Wendy about before. So highly recommend that you go back into our catalog and see what the conversations with Wendy were all about. But these are phenomenal resources. I think I've read half the books on that list, maybe more, but I'm very excited to, The Craving Mind. That's going to be the next one that I dive into.
Oh, it's a great one. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So Wendy, as we wrap up every show, we love to give our guests just kind of the last word, if you will, at the end. If someone is struggling with a vice transfer, what words of encouragement can you offer them?
Well, I just want you to know that you belong to an incredible community. we're all struggling with it. Please, please, please don't feel bad about it. I have the people that I work with are the bravest, the kindest, the smartest, and the strongest that any population I've worked with ever in my life. And it's because of what we bring. It's because of our journey. It's because of where we've been and it's where we're going. So please don't give up on yourself. Please be kind to yourself. Step back, get curious. Try some of the things we've talked about today. Be honest with yourself, be aware, be excited about developing new habits and skills. It's kind of fun. Take time to breathe, retrain your mind, rehab it, rejuvenate. There's an old saying, where your mind goes, the body will follow. And we know, anybody that's heard me before talk about how the body kind of holds the mind up. But in this case, let your mind take your body to a good spot.
Yeah, I could
love
not
being back with you guys. So much fun. Oh,
Wendy, yeah. You are amazing. We so appreciate just your time and your expertise and your wisdom. I mean, you offer this advice as your profession, and the fact that you join us so often and so frequently and so passionately, we're just so thankful for you as a resource in our community.
On my part. Yeah, you guys are.
We are each other's people. We have established that.
We have.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So I highly recommend, Wendy does not have an Instagram, even though I've been nudging her towards that way. Maybe one day.
It's on my to-do. Yeah.
Oh, cannot wait. But I highly recommend, go to Wendy's website, www.wendyrawlings.com. You can also direct message us and we will send you her way. Wendy has some amazing supports in the works for the greater public. And as soon as she debuts them, you will, of course, be hearing about them from us. So just keep your eyes and ears and everything peeled on our feed, because as soon as Wendy launches it, the whole world's going to know. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. I have a little sneak peek, but yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome.
You have an inside track, huh?
I do. I know somebody. I have my people. I know somebody. Oh, goodness. All right, Jason, my friend, you want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Wendy, I just, you know, like April said, you're an invaluable resource to us. We love having you on. Every time you come on, we feel like mental gymnastics has been completed, because we go through so many just mind-bending trials and tribulations there, just things that we just learned, things we had no clue even existed before. So we can't thank you enough for your time and your knowledge. We appreciate everybody for liking the show, sharing the show, subscribing, doing all the things that you're doing, tagging us and stuff. Please keep doing all of those things, because helping us grow and reach the community is exactly what we need to do to help other people like you out there and like ourselves, because helping you guys helps us tremendously, more than you guys will ever know. And like April said, we're always available on instant messages. If you need us, please reach out. We're here for you. You've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thank you, Wendy. See you soon.
Thanks, guys. See you later. Bye-bye. Bye.